In July 1939, Bass died, while I stayed healthy as ever, and I felt that God had betrayed me twice. 2 months later, in September, our government called for a general mobilization. For once, Mama allowed her radio to be used for news. We turned the volume as high as it would go, but still Papa could not hear, so my little sister, Geltje, stationed herself at the set and shouted salient pieces of information to him. "All reserve units are activated, Papa. All private cars are commandeered." By nightfall, the traffic jam had begun, the endless traffic jam that was to be the characteristic feature of the months before invasion. Every automobile in Holland was on the road. There seemed to be just as many going north as there were going south. No one knew where he was supposed to be, but he was getting there as fast as he could. Day after day, wearing my baggy trousers and loose blouse, I stood under the tree where Bass used to stand and watched. Nobody talked much. Only Mr. Wetstra seemed to find the courage to put into words what we all knew. I could not understand why I was being drawn toward the Wetstras at this time, but frequently I found myself walking past that kitchen window. "Good afternoon, Andrew."
"Good afternoon, Mrs. Wetstra."
"Out on an errand for your mother? You'd better have a cookie for energy." She picked up a plate of cookies and brought them to the window. Mr. Wetstra looked up from the kitchen table. "Is that our little Andrew, out to see the mobilization first hand?"
"Yes, sir."
For some reason I put my cookie behind my back. "Andrew, you must say prayers for your country every night. We are about to go through a very hard time."
"Yes, sir."
"What good can men with pop guns do against planes and tanks?"
"Yes, sir."
"They'll be here, Andrew, with their steel helmets and their goose step and their hate, and all we will have is our prayers." Mr. Wetstra came over to the window and leaned across the sill. "Will you pray, Andrew? Pray for the courage to do all we can, and then, having done all, to stand. Will you do that, Andrew?"
"Yes, sir."
"Good boy." Mr. Wetstra drew his head back into the room. "Now get along on your errand." But as I turned and started down the street, Mr. Wetstra called after me, "You can eat the cookie. Oh, I know sometimes that old stove of ours smokes something awful, but it's worked fine ever since I got my new window in." That night, lying on my bed in the loft, I got to thinking about Mr. Wetstra. So he'd known all along. But he hadn't told my father, as every other grown-up in town would have done. I wondered why. I also wondered about his wanting me to pray. What good would that do? God never listened. If the Germans really did come, I planned to do a lot worse to them than pray.